discuss Acts the 20th chapter last week and didn't get that far. So I'd like to go back and finish that up. And then next week, we'll probably begin a discussion of the ways that the early church kind of messed up the Lord's Supper. And we'll kind of focus on 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. And we'll be able to understand a little bit more. I didn't want to do that tonight because I didn't think we'd have time to get through 1 Corinthians 11 and Acts 20. So hopefully we'll be able to do that next week. Amen. Let me start the recording.
Recording in progress.
We talked about the early church's practice, and of course, we understand that we get information not just from what Jesus said when he instituted the supper, as it's recorded for us in the Gospels, but we also have the Apostle Paul, who explains some things that Jesus said that weren't recorded in the Gospels. It's not a contradiction. It's just Paul is led into all truth by the Spirit, and so he's revealing this for us. And 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, brings up a really critical idea. The apostle in 1 Corinthians 11 said that Jesus made the statement, as oft as you drink it, that you should do that in remembrance of me. And I was so impressed with what John had to say this morning, and this idea of focusing on remembering. Tonight, we're going to get away from that a little bit. We're going to talk about the concept of how often we ought to do this. And this is, in my mind, this is not very much of a question, because I've come to the conclusion that we ought to do it every first day of the week, that this should be a weekly observance. This question was debated in the early part of Restoration history, when they were first coming out of denominational kind of Romish practices. They started asking the question, well, how often should we participate in the Lord's Supper? And it turns out that we're going to have to reason about some examples in order to figure out how often to do it, because Jesus, either in the Gospels or here in 1 Corinthians 11, doesn't say, this is how often I want you to do this. And we really don't have a commandment anywhere. We just have to reason, looking at the experience of the early church, in order to understand this. So I talked a little bit about Acts, the second chapter, and it seems like this phrase, to break bread, was a phrase that referred to the Lord's Supper, and it also referred to eating a common meal. So you had regular practice. I think that's the Lord's Supper in verse 42 there in Acts 2. And you had daily practice in verse 46. I don't think that their daily practice was the same as the periodic practice. In other words, I don't think that they took the Lord's Supper on a daily basis like they would eat a common meal on a daily basis. We talked about that a little bit, regularly repeated practice. We looked at Justin Martyr and what he had to say when he wrote a defense of the early Christians and described their assemblies. And he says that on the day which is called Sunday, all Christians who dwell either in town or country come together in one place. So the conclusion that I reach after reading Justin Martyr, and it's, there's nothing wrong with going beyond the information that's recorded in the Bible, as long as we can look at reliable information and add that to our understanding of the biblical information. So we looked at Acts 2. Tonight, let's look at Acts 20. And I have to tell you that in the course of my preaching, I probably overstated the case for a weekly conclusion based on Acts 20. Again, I'm not saying that I doubt that we ought to do it on the first day of every week, but I think I probably drew some conclusions from Acts 20 verses 1 through 11 that just weren't warranted. So let's set the stage a little bit. The first six verses of Acts 20 talks about Paul coming to Troas and staying there for 7 days. Now, he's been traveling with a number of people, particularly Sopater, who was from Berea, some Thessalonians named Aristarchus and Secundus, Gaius, who was from Derbe, and Timothy, and from Asia, Tychicus and Trophimus. So these companions joined Paul in Troas. They had apparently been with him earlier, but they went ahead of Paul, and Paul stayed behind in Philippi. Then on the he comes to Troas, and he stays there for 7 days. And then verse 7, the beginning of verse 7 says, on the first day of the week, the disciples gathered to break bread. And it was on this occasion that the apostle Paul preached. He was ready to depart on the morrow. Eutychus, one of the disciples there in Troas, was sitting in a window, and he fell out of the window because Paul, as is the case with most preachers, went on for a long time. They didn't have air conditioning, and he probably fell from the window just because he was tired. They thought he had died. I don't know that he died. Paul, in the 10th verse, makes a statement that reminds me of the statement that Jesus made about the young damsel that everybody thought was dead, and Jesus said, no, she's not dead, she's just sleeping. Well, Paul makes the same kind of statement about Eutychus. In the case of Jesus, I think he raises this young woman from the dead. This was a euphemistic way of describing death. Jesus, I'm sure, in my mind, raised this young woman from the dead. Eutychus falls from the window. Everybody thinks he's dead. Paul goes down, and he finds him still alive. That's in verse 10. Everybody's excited about that. He is not dead. And then in verse 11, it describes how they broke bread and they ate. And it seems to me that those may be two different activities. So let's look at this carefully. In verse 7, it says this. This is what you see there on the screen. That's The King James Version with Strong's numbers that are included in it, if you're using a lot of Bible reading apps on your phone, it's usually designated as King James Version Plus. So if you look at it, you see these little numbers, and those are Strong's numbering system. And for those of us that don't know the Greek alphabet, couldn't figure out the alphabetical order of the entries in Strong's Concordance or Strong's Dictionary, this is a big help. So it says, on the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached to them, ready to depart on the morrow, and he continued his speech until midnight. Well, when it says on the first day of the week, what exactly can we conclude about that? Now, I have always felt like, and I have made the argument, that this was on the first day of the week, and every time the first day of the week rolls around, this is something that we would do. However, when I look at the definition of this article, the, and I try to understand as precisely as I can what this is saying, I have some difficulty. It's a definite article. It's masculine, feminine, or neuter gender. It's a demonstrative pronoun. And he gives, and Thayer in his lexicon gives certain ways that this word, 3588, I'm not going to try to pronounce all of that, but he gives the way that this word has been translated in different places. And he says the examples of this being translated include this, that, or these. And so I thought, how do you know what it ought to be? Well, it's got to be context. So is it on this first day of the week? Or that first day of the week? And does that change the way that that statement must be understood? Now, when I say must be understood, that's the first step to saying that if you disagree with this, then you're doing something wrong. Can I say that the is the only way that this can be translated here? Well, I can't say that. How does it make this statement read? Or what's the import of the statement if instead of it being translated on the first day of the week, it's translated on this first day of the week? Any thoughts?
I'm not sure it makes a difference whether you use the or this, because whatever first day it was, that was the first day of the week. I mean, if you say the or this, it doesn't make a difference, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, some people have concluded if it's this first day of the week, that this wasn't something that they did on every first day of the week, but this first day of the week they did. I can't answer that question. It causes me to be a bit more cautious as I think about what Acts 20 verse 7 says.
I'm going to heat up some more stew first. Okay?
You know, that's one of those words that's, I don't know, it's almost a throwaway word. It's just a definite article. Is there a difference between the and a? Well, yeah, there is. And how do we know which one is the right one to be used in this place? So I think we have to be careful. If it's this, then there may be a reason to say that they didn't do this every first day of the week, but this first day of the week, they did. So, let's continue. When the disciples came together, that's an important idea. And this word together is from 48:63, and Thayer defines it this way. He says it's to gather together, to gather, to draw together, collect. And then he gives some illustrations like fish or the net that the fish are caught in. I don't think that's what this is talking about. He says it could sometimes mean to bring together, to assemble, or to collect, to join together, to join in one those that were previously separated. So it would be like if you had a dollar bill and you accidentally ripped it, you could bring it back together by putting some tape on it. And I don't think that's what we're talking about. Together by convoking or by calling everyone together. We use the term convocation to refer to the ceremonies at the first day of school. Sometimes we call that the convocation, and all of the students and all of the faculty and everybody meets together in a particular place. And so you kind of have the idea that we're bringing everybody together. Then this shade of meaning in my mind seems to be indicated here, to be gathered, to come together, to gather, or to meet. So that tells me that this was something that they did, gathered together. It's not something that we do separated. And there's been a lot of thinking that's gone into how this impacts our ability to utilize Zoom. Are we really gathered together? We're not in one place, but we are called together. And is that, does that meet the criteria of coming together? And I have said before that my conclusion is that the Lord's Supper and perhaps the taking all of the assembled funds up into one place, we call that contribution. These are things that we do when we're called together, and that's the only place that we do them. We sing when we're together, but that's not the only time we sing. We pray when we're together, but that's not the only time we pray. This is something that we do only in a gathering. And I have concluded that Zoom is a way for us to gather. We're not physically together, But my conclusion is that we've met the criteria of being called together. And then he says there's another shade of meaning, which is to lead with oneself. And this is more like hosting a dinner party. We call everyone together. We host the party. We're taking the lead as ourselves, but the important part is that we're calling people together. Other thoughts? And I appreciate the fact, you know, I can only talk about my own struggles. I appreciate the fact that the elders have struggled with trying to understand this and make sure that we're doing something in an appropriate way. And they too have struggled with this idea. Is a Zoom meeting coming together? And I know some churches have concluded that they're, based on their understanding of this, Zoom does not meet that criteria.
Dean, this is John Hicks.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question. So, like the word the Lord's Day or the
right.
First day of the week. How's it differ from the command in the Old Testament whenever they were told to keep the Sabbath? And I think we can conclude that they definitely kept every Sabbath just by, you know, what's written.
I don't know. I didn't consider the definite article in the Hebrew. I don't know.
Okay.
That would be something that would help. And I know that their practice should have been, let's say it that way, to remember every Sabbath and we know that from, in part, we know that from the way that the manna was given. So there's something to be said for that. And that might be a fruitful exercise.
But isn't that what we're saying when we read this? Upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, that we're assuming, or much like the Sabbath, we're keeping that every first day of the week. But if this is written, if the word is translated this upon this first day of the week, it could be, Paul was there on this particular Sunday, and this is when we did it. But maybe we only did it once a month, and this was the week to do it. So yeah. I think the is consistent with the Sabbath, but if the word can also be translated this, that could change the context or the meaning of that particular first day of the week. So that's where I think it gets confusing. Not if it's translated, or if the word is the, I think we can be pretty sure that we would practice this every first day of the week, much like they did every Sabbath. They observed every Sabbath on a weekly basis. But it's when it's this that could change the meaning of that sentence, right?
It doesn't. It doesn't demand a different understanding of the sentence, but it It allows for a different understanding of the sentence.
Right, exactly.
We'll talk about some, you know, John has brought up the Sabbath. We'll talk about this a little bit later when we talk about Paul hasting to be in Jerusalem. So, just, I guess what I'm saying is that I can understand how someone might reach a different conclusion than I have reached. Nothing wrong with, I don't think there's anything wrong with my conclusion, but I'm going to have to do some research about the definite article in the Hebrew language. I didn't do that. So this is all new to me. This is not something that I have read somebody else talk about. That always scares me in a way when I talk about something that I haven't read somewhere, because I'm just not that smart. But it is, I will admit that my reading has not generally included what would have been written by people who concluded that this, that the definite article ought to be this. And so I'm not as familiar with the arguments and the logic behind the arguments that they have made.
Well, there's certainly no way to figure out that it is there once a year or once a month either. I mean, the day and this day makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, you make a good point. It could be once a month. It could be once a year. And remember, Jesus' statement, as it's recorded by Paul, was, as oft as you do it. So,
well, it makes more sense to me. It's on whatever first day that is, and there's a first day every week. So it makes more sense to think it is the first day.
We study the Old Testament, and they met on the Sabbath, every Sabbath. They were to rest and they were to meet every Sabbath. And I would conclude that because they met on the first day of the week to break bread, that we should do the same every first day of the week.
Right. That's my conclusion. That's the conclusion that I have reached. I just need to be careful that I don't go beyond saying this is my conclusion and saying this is law.
It would be a little bit difficult to have a close-knit family if you meet once a year. How can you support one another and know what's going on in your community of Christians and believers if you meet once a year?
Well,
now I understand that they may have just taken, there may be some people who believe that once a year would be okay. I know, a lot of the, various denominations take it in Easter and Christmas and maybe Thanksgiving, and that's about it. special occasions. But I think to have a close-knit family, one that you're trying to support one another as best you possibly can, and be as close to one another. I don't see a better way than together around the Lord's table, to remember Christ's sacrifice for us.
Yep.
And when you know, when you do that once a year, it just shows there's not a whole lot of importance connected with it.
Good point, Ron. But remember, the Christians in Jerusalem would argue, if you don't meet together daily, because they met together daily, they would make the same argument and say, well, you just do it once a week. How can you be close if you do it just once a week? So, something to...
I'd be surprised if they were...
Go ahead, Carolyn.
I was going to say, I'd be surprised, though, if they were commemorating the Lord's death every day. I mean, if they're eating and, you know, probably laughing and enjoying each other's company, my guess is they probably weren't commemorating his death and setting it aside as a special time, you know. Okay. I think this, to me, kind of muddies the waters somewhat, in my head anyways, when I think this first day of the week. But, you know, that's just my thinking.
Okay. Now.
Day is this first day of the week?
I'm sorry, say again, Dan.
Today is this first day of the week. This is the first day of the week for us.
Right. It's the first day of the week. It's not separate from other first days of the week. This would seem to say, this first day of the week was somehow special, and something was happening this first day of the week that didn't happen every first day of the week.
Right, that's where I was going with it, rather than what was what you were talking about earlier.
Okay. So, let's continue. Now we have this phrase, breaking bread. And that phrase, remember we saw that back in Acts 2? We saw a little bit of difference. Let me go back to Acts 2. And remember the break is a little bit different when we talk about the regularly repeated practice. And I think this is the Lord's Supper. And the daily practice of breaking bread. This term break is a little bit different. So let's get back over here to breaking. This is the same word that's used in Acts 2 at verse 46. It's not the word that's in verse 42. Now, my conclusion is that this wasn't the daily practice. We'll talk about that as we get a little bit further and we talk about Paul being in a hurry to get to Jerusalem. So we'll talk a little bit about that more. I don't see that this was something that they did on a daily basis, even though it picks up the word from Acts 2. Yeah, I sometimes get off in the weeds a little bit, but it's important that we think about these things. And then bread. Now, this is the same word that's used back in Acts 2. They came together to break bread. And as I was doing the research, I ran across something interesting that I just wanted to pass on. The bread that they used, the unleavened bread that they used, was probably when the Israelites made it in the first century, now we're not talking about what happened after the centuries and we started using matzah crackers. This is back in the first century. Thayer says the Israelites made this in the form of an oblong or round cake, interestingly, as thick as one's thumb and as large as a plate or platter. Hence, it was not to be cut, but broken. Just interesting. Pass that on. The bread that they used in the Passover when Jesus instituted the supper was, all of the information that I can find suggests that it was about as thick as your thumb. Now, he doesn't, there's no indication that he says it has to be as thick as your thumb. This is just the best information that we can gather looking at what their practice was. Thayer says that this bread is used at the love feasts and at the Lord's table. So he says there's two kinds of things that happen in the assembly. That's what Thayer concludes. So I think he's talking about the Lord's Supper here. Now, this idea that Paul was in a hurry to get to Jerusalem so that he could be there by the day of Pentecost. It was a Jewish festival, and he just wanted to be there by the day of Pentecost. I have used that understanding to point out that if he was in such a hurry, he wouldn't have waited for 7 days here in Troas. He'd have taken the Lord's Supper on Monday, if that's something that they ever did. So it's not daily practice, regular practice, but I think it happened on Sunday. And I've made the argument, and I have since begun to understand that maybe I was putting too much into this argument that's not there. If you back this up, Paul is in Troas about the time of the Passover. Now, it wasn't the Passover because he didn't leave Philippi until after the days of unleavened bread. So that would have been Passover. Paul spent Passover in Philippi. Okay. And so he gets to Troas around the time of the Passover, which, interestingly, is the same time. Of course, it was the Passover specifically when the Lord's Supper was originally instituted, or it was originally associated with the time of Passover. So Paul is hasting to get to Jerusalem, but you have to think about this for a minute. I've always said he was in a hurry to leave Troas so he could get to Jerusalem. Well, if that's the case, why did he wait in Philippi? Why didn't he go with his traveling companions to Troas? He waited in Philippi, spent 5 days traveling. He could easily have traveled with his companions to Troas. And there's some indication that he would have been there on the previous Sunday. And if he was in such a hurry to get to Jerusalem, then he would have celebrated the Lord's Supper with them the previous Sunday, and he'd have gone ahead and left for Jerusalem. So, I think in my desire to say that Paul was in a hurry to get to Jerusalem and he had to wait until Sunday to take the Lord's Supper, I think I was right that he had to wait until Sunday. That this was not daily practice, it was regular practice. So I think it's definitely an argument for saying that he had to wait until Sunday. It may lend some credence to the idea that the reason that he didn't do it the previous Sunday was because it wasn't this Sunday. He wanted to be there on this Sunday. Those are all things that we have to think about. We have to consider. So I probably read too much into this statement in verse 16. Paul had determined to sail by Ephesus. He didn't go to Ephesus because he would not spend the time in Asia. For if he hasted, it would be possible for him to be in Jerusalem on the day of Pentecost. I don't think that the day of Pentecost carried a significance to Paul beyond the idea that it was a Jewish festival. Paul is a Jew. I mean, he also went to the temple when he got to Jerusalem. He paid his respects at the Jewish institution. So my whole point with this discussion is, let's be careful how we think about how often we do this. And understand that it's a product of logic. It's a product of reason. And some people, using logic, have reached a different conclusion than we have. Does that say I ought to reject my logic? No, it doesn't say that at all. I have to abide by my logic. I have to be fully persuaded in my own mind. Otherwise, it's not a faith. Okay. Next week, we will look at 1 Corinthians 11. And unfortunately, 1 Corinthians 11 is not the Apostle Paul saying, this is what you've done in Corinth, and I heartily approve of it. Paul is saying, here's what you allowed this to become, and it was never supposed to be this in the first place. So 1 Corinthians 11 is not like what's described here in Acts 20 or in Acts 2. It's Paul correcting some abuse. And you know, Kim has always said, based on her background in HR, if you want to understand the problems that somebody has had, read the rules and regulations that they put in place to deal with the problems. You won't understand what it was supposed to be sometimes, but you'll understand what the problems were. So we'll keep that in mind as we look at 1 Corinthians 11. We've already kind of touched on that, but But we'll spend a little bit more time dealing with that next week.